Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 52. I'm recording it on Wednesday, December 3rd, 2008. The PE10 level today is 14. That's fair value. That means that stocks purchased today offer a strong long-term value proposition. If you purchase stocks today, they may go down dramatically in coming years, but if you can hold for at least 10 years, you are likely to receive a good return on your money. That's the opposite of the situation that applied from 1995 through the first part of 2008. The title of this podcast is, What is Rational Investing? I talk about rational investing in every podcast, but I don't think I sometimes give a brief definition of what it is, but I don't go into much detail. And so I thought I should take a podcast and try to at least go into a little more detail than I usually do. What brought this to mind is that I have a section at the blog. If you go to the PassionSaving.com site, there's a blog. It's called A Rich Life. And I make a contribution there each business day. And up in the right-hand corner, I have a section called Today's Passion. And there I include a link each day, and lately all the links have been about investing because that's what's on people's minds and that's what's on the minds of community members in the Retire Early and Indexing discussion board communities where I work. But we will, we'll be turning to other issues as well down the road, saving and career growth. But for now, the focus is on investing. So I as I go around the internet and I see things of interest, I stick the links in a file I keep and then pull them out each day for my Today's Passion. I sometimes have links, going a week or two into the future. And I saw two this morning, and they were at the Atlantic Magazine website. And one was an article by Henry Blodgett, who is a name. He was a big name during the dot-com bubble in the 1990s, and he's sort of sobered up in recent years, and he's written some articles. I've seen his name, I think maybe three articles now, and the articles are usually fairly good stuff. And the other one was by Robert Shiller, who is, of course, the master of rational investing. Robert Shiller is the godfather of the rational investing concept, along with John Bogle, is the other godfather, and Warren Buffett plays a big role in the formation of the rational investing approach. John Walter Russell is, of course, co-creator, so he's involved in a more direct way. But I looked at these two articles, and both of them had similar themes. Blodgett was saying, he gave a good description of how it is that we got into this mess in the investing world, and he did a good job. And just basically saying, take a look at the man in the mirror. He was saying, we can blame greedy Wall Street types or bankers or poor regulation by Congress or whatever you want to look at. But he said the true problem is that each player in the game is acting rationally from the standpoint of self-interest. The problem is we're all deceiving ourselves about the value of stocks. And I, to a large extent, I subscribe to that theory. There's no question there's a lot of truth to that. The only part of Blodgett's analysis that I don't totally subscribe to, and he may be right, I may be wrong. It may be that I'm just too optimistic of a personality. He has a lot of historical evidence to argue on his side of the case, but I still take issue. He basically concludes by saying, we will find our way out of this mess, and stocks will rise again, Might take some time, but that will happen. But then he says, time will pass, and we will forget how horrible it is to bid stocks up to the sort of insane price levels we bid them up to in the 1990s, and we'll start all over again. We'll go through this cycle again. We'll destroy ourselves yet again, as we have. This is the fourth time in U.S. history we've done this. When we got to those insane price levels, there were many people warning us, people like Robert Shiller, but he's the leader, but there were many, many others, saying, no, this is a bad idea. You're going to destroy yourself. You're going to cause a recession, maybe even a depression. You're going to cause people to lose their houses. You're going to cause people to lose their jobs. Don't do this. This is insane. And we didn't listen. And when those people made those arguments, they pointed to the fact that we've done this before. We tried. Passive investing is not a new idea. It's just a new name. Passive investing is emotional investing. And it's just a new name for a very old phenomenon. And every time we've tried it, it's resulted in bone-crushing losses. And of course, it's done the same this time. So Blodgett had sort of a, what I would call a pessimistic, deterministic approach or conclusion. His analysis was fine. His conclusion I'm not thrilled with, although as I say, you can make a good case for what he's saying. I'm just doggedly optimistic and sort of refuse to acknowledge that reality, if it is a reality. Shiller made a similar analysis, and I think that Shiller was slightly more positive. Shiller made a point at the conclusion of his article that I thought was just outstanding, and it's a point that I'm trying to focus on in a lot of my podcast. Shiller said, at the conclusion of his analysis, he said, we've just lived through two bubbles, two horrible bubbles, the housing bubble and the stock bubble. But he said, we are now living through a third bubble. I'm afraid that we're now living through a third bubble. And he called it a bubble of pessimism, that we're now at a stage where it's not, we're not dealing with irrational exuberance. We're dealing with irrational pessimism, irrational gloom and doom. And, and then he had I can't quote him, but he made a point there at the end where he basically said, the way to avoid this, he says, this is going to cause us pain. It's going to make the economic problem worse than it needs to be. And he said the way to get through it, the way to overcome this problem, is by educating people about how stock investing works. Those aren't his words, but that was the gist of what he was saying. I agree with that so strongly. What pains me today is obviously none of us want to see this turn into an even worse recession or, even worse, a depression. And the reality is we did behave irresponsibly in the 1990s. We did engage in insane behavior. We were essentially borrowing stock returns from the future in order to enjoy them in the present. We were borrowing on credit cards as investors, not just in the real credit card, in our spending area of life. Investors were borrowing on a credit card. We were all incurring massive debt, taking money out of the future and putting it into the present. And now the future's come and we have to pay the bill. But the wonderful news is that bill is paid in full today. We have paid for the excesses of the 90s. We're now at fair value. We don't have to pay anymore. But the problem we have is there's been very little discussion of how stock investing really works for 20, 30 years now. Passive investing, emotional investing has dominated the scene. And we haven't been able to get discussion of the realities out to people that need to hear it. And only when people learn the realities will people again start to feel confident enough in their stock investments to avoid a bubble of pessimism. So the answer now is to get word out, to explain things in reasonable ways so that people can regain confidence in the markets. Otherwise, what we're going to end up doing is not borrowing from the future. We're going to end up crediting the future. We're going to end up lowering returns artificially in the short term and pushing those returns out into the future, which is nice for the stock investors of, 7-8 years from now. But it's not so nice for the next 6 or 7 years of, of our economic situation. We could be destroying ourselves for the next 5 or 6 or 7 years. So let's please not do that. Let's get the information out that people need to hear so that we can regain confidence in markets that really do make sense. If only we would explain them in sensible ways, they do make sense. Nothing that has happened is shocking. Stocks haven't changed. You hear people saying, oh, stocks have changed. They talk about a black swan. This is an event nobody could have foreseen. Plenty of people foresaw it. There was nothing shocking has happened. Nothing surprising has happened. When you bid prices up insanely, you set yourself up for a huge fall. And all we have done in recent months is experience that fall. All right, that's too long of a preface, but that's what got me thinking about this. And I thought I should do a podcast describing a little bit what rational investing is. And what rational investing is it's just what Shiller was getting at. Shiller's saying we need to educate people. Well, that's what rational investing is. Rational investing is, it's not a formula. And I have so many people ask me this. They'll say, well, Rob, what does your investing approach say we should do today? Should I buy stocks? Should I sell stocks? Should I just stay where I am? There is no one answer to that question. I start off every podcast by remarking that stocks offer a strong long-term value proposition today. So if you think that that means you should go out and buy stocks, well, then feel free to do so. But it doesn't necessarily mean that. It could be that you've been engaged in passive investing for the past 10 or 20 years. And if that's the case, you're probably pretty shook up now. And it might be that you should take 6 months out of the market altogether and just have some emotional healing and some, some learning experiences. Learn about the ABCs of stock investing, how stock investing really works. Overcome this disease you're suffering from, this passive investing disease. So it doesn't necessarily mean, the fact that stocks offer a strong long-term value proposition does not mean you should be going with a heavy stock allocation. Although it certainly can mean that to some people. It depends on, you have to look at all the realities. One reality is, if you look at the historical data, stocks offer a strong long-term value proposition. That is a true reality. But the emotional realities are also realities, and you can't leave that out of the discussion. And the passive model, the passive mindset is to focus on these narrow little points. What passive investing dogmatists tend to do is, I believe that the root problem is human insecurity. They're just scared. They're scared to put their money at risk. And of course, we all are. Nothing strange about that. But they deal with that insecurity by focusing on one little point that they can prove. They can prove mathematically. And then they just drill that over and over and over again. And they ignore all of the other considerations. And as a result, they are not tuned into reality, and they end up suffering huge losses and a loss of confidence down the road. Rational investing is the opposite. Rational investing is always trying to understand as many realities as you can, knowing that you can never understand them all, not even trying, and therefore avoiding dogmatism, but trying to understand as many realities as you can, and basically just to invest rationally. So it's a concept that people have a hard time grasping, not because it's complicated or difficult, but only because they're so used to the alternative. We've all become so accustomed to the way passive investing dogmatists set things up that we think that's the only way. And when someone sets up a rational approach, we sort of freak out. We say, wait a minute, that's not how investing's done. Well, I say it is how investing is done, or at least it should be how investing is done, and I'm urging us all to start down this road. What I'm really saying is we use, why do I call it rational investing? It's because passive investing is emotional. passive investing begins with emotion. The idea that you don't need to change your stock allocation when prices change dramatically is it makes zero sense. It's impossible to make sense out of that concept. And so when you become a passive investor, you start off by giving up your human reason. And of course, there are all sorts of implications that follow. You need to give up your human reason and all sorts of questions once you go down that path in order to defend your initial giving up of human reason. Rational investing is the opposite. We try to build a strong base of knowledge. And then, you know, there's certain things we can know for sure. That's your base. And then you build on that and you say, well, these other things I don't know for sure, but I have fairly high confidence. And then at the very top, you might say, at the top of the pyramid, you might say, well, these things I'm not so sure about at all. These are just guesses. And you, of course, give less confidence to the guesses and more to the base, to the things you're sure about. That's how we make decisions in all sorts of areas of life endeavor. We do that when we're trying to figure out how to raise children. We do that when we're trying to figure out how to build a bridge. We do that when we're trying to succeed at our jobs. And we should do that when we are devising investment strategies. So the base question is, what should your allocation be? That's the core question where the investor has control over his fate. We can't control what the market does. That's why I hate these questions where people say, what should I do today? There's no good answer to that question because we don't know what the market's going to do in the short term. But we do know what works over the long term, and that is you build your base. And the most important question you will ever decide as an investor is, what is your stock allocation? So make sure you get that one right. And that's the one that the passive investors get wrong. When they say go with a single stock allocation regardless of price levels, that's just 100% wrong. It's crazy. It's dangerous. It's irresponsible. There's no historical data supporting that idea. There is no common sense argument that can be made in defense of that idea. So the passive investors have built their base on sand. Rational investors aim to do the opposite. We don't get it perfect. We know we don't get it perfect. So we really don't even claim to do so. But what we try to do is to build the strongest base we can and then build on top of it. So I'm not going to lay out specific, you know, recommendations. I'm not going to say, you know, when the such and such goes to such and such, you know, buy, and then this is your signal, and then this is your signal to sell, and all this sort of nonsense. What I'm going to do is lay out just, you know, principles or ways of attack, you know, thoughts, considerations, maybe that's the best word, considerations, things you should consider. And then using the knowledge that is plentiful in the world today. The internet is a sea of investing advice. So you'll have no trouble finding the details. That stuff is everywhere. What you need is a filter to filter out the stuff that is quality from the stuff that is junk. And so what I try to develop in my development of the rational investing model is the appropriate filters. How do you know what information is good and what information is junk? And I can't give you final answers because I'm only one person and I come from my particular set of life experiences, my particular perspective, my particular personality. And there is no one person who knows it all or who can know it all. But I believe that from my experience, from my participation in the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate debate, I can lay out some filters that might be helpful. And that's what the purpose of this podcast is, to list those filters. So the first one is to say that the most basic thing, on the most basic level, what is rational investing? Rational investing is a rejection of passive investing. I've really covered that in the preface, but that's how rational investing came about. I didn't go into a room one day and say, I'm building a website. What should I do? Oh, I know. If I develop a new model for how to invest, that would help. That would build it up. No. That's an idiotic way to build up your website, first of all. Please take my word. Don't follow that approach. Children of the world, do not follow Rob Bennett's path to building a website. It will cause you great pain. That's not the way, friends and neighbors. But no, what I did was, what I really did was the first step I took before I even had a website was I built a community of aspiring early retirees at the Motley Fool site. And we had a fantastic community. And it was in that community that we began discussing investing back in May of 2002 and realistic ways to invest. And that's, you know, it started with safe withdrawal rates. We discovered the errors in the old school safe withdrawal rate studies. But the big turning point was when the reaction to our discoveries. And we had many people very excited about our discoveries. But we had many people very abusive, very upset about our discoveries. And, you know, some people just ignore that. They just sort of take it like, well, it's a fact of life. There's abuse. Of course, there are abusive people on the internet. And people just say, oh, well, there's abusive people. I'll run and hide. I'll just keep my mouth shut. I won't say anything. I notice that they get upset about safe withdrawal rates. Let's not talk about safe withdrawal rates. That's how a lot of people elected to respond. And that's where I took a different path. I said, no, that's not the answer. If these people can't discuss these issues, there's something wrong here. This is telling us something. Something strange. People don't censor other people without good reason. And so, you know, I call it my spidey sense. I say my spidey sense started to tingle. And of course, I'm a journalist by background. So when people censor things, I'm sort of highly alerted to what's going on. And I said, why? Why are they so uptight? Why are they so anxious when we talk about the effect of valuations? Well, the answer is that they're uptight because they're too intelligent not to know that valuations affect long-term returns. They know this, just as I know it, and just as I hope you know it, just as Shiller knows it. They know, but they don't want to know. They want to invest passively. They want to do what they want to do. And knowing they've got to, when their knowledge starts to, you know, creep up on them, they've got to stomp it out. And Rob Bennett was this fellow who said, no, I'm not going to let you stomp it out. I would hold a mirror up to them and say, look, this is what you are saying, and this is what the historical data says. You know, and they came to hate me. But what is it they were hating? They're hating themselves, really. They're hating their own intellect. They're hating their own human reason. Because that's all I was doing. All I was doing was saying, here's what the historical data says about safe withdrawal rates. And it's hard to argue with the historical data. It's like arguing with a mountain or an ocean. It's just a reality. It is what it is. So that's how rational investing came to be. And I basically said, well, maybe the real story here isn't that the safe withdrawal rate studies are wrong. That's a big story. We use those studies to plan our retirements, and the errors in those studies are going to cause millions of busted retirements in days to come. So that's a big story. But the bigger story is that we can't, as a community, we weren't able to acknowledge the error as a community. There were people in the community, hundreds of them, possibly thousands of them, who did acknowledge it in some way, shape, or form. But there was a large segment that could not acknowledge it. And that's the bigger story. And that's where rational investing began. Rational investing was, how do we avoid deceiving ourselves? That's a whole science of itself, or a whole study of its, a whole course of study of itself. And that's what Shiller was getting at. He was saying we need to learn how to stop deceiving ourselves if we're going to avoid an even greater recession, even bigger price drops. So I think this is important. And I can't go through all the things I discovered, but you know, read the articles at the site, listen to the other podcasts. That's what it's all about. Rational investing is, you know, the antidote to passive investing. It's the opposite in every way. It's saying passive investing is a poison. How do you recover from that poison? You recover by getting in touch with your rationality, getting in touch with your humanity. You know, the name of the book I'm working on investing is called Investing for Humans. Humans are rational creatures. When we deny our rationality, we deny our humanity. We become savages. And that's what we saw in a lot of these investing discussions. We saw human beings, intelligent people, you know, generally good people, people who contributed constructively in earlier days, you know, generously without getting paid, turning into savages when their investing ideas were questioned. And there's a reason. It's because the real enemy was not Rob Bennett. The real enemy was Bob Dylan. Had a line about this in the, I don't know if I can pull it to mind, in the song Joker Man. He said, talked about staying one step ahead of the cruel persecutor within. That's how I see the goons. They're engaging in deception and intimidation and word games with the hope of staying one step ahead of the cruel persecutor within. They've got a, you know, Rob Bennett tries to speak to them politely and in charity and with kindness and with warmth. I try to correct them, but I do so as kind as I possibly can. But that cruel persecutor within isn't so kind. The cruel persecutor within says, you're dumb, you're bad, you're evil, you're stupid. And if you want to invest rationally, you're going to have to calm that voice. You're going to have to, first you have to acknowledge the voice is there. That's the big step. And then you need to learn how to negotiate with that voice and calm it and become emotionally balanced. That's what it's all about. I can't reduce that to a set of six tips, you know, six tips by which you can, you know, trounce the market by next Wednesday. That's not the way. But I can tell you that if you want to retire early, you can retire 5 years sooner by learning to overcome the darkest, ugliest, meanest investing emotions. And that's the switch. That's the switch from the passive/emotional model to the rational model. So rational investing is anti-passive investing. Rational investing is probability investing. I considered giving it that name, and it's possible that I'll switch. I spent a long time trying to decide what to name this, and I probably had a dozen possibilities, and one of them was probability investing, and I like that because that's what we do. If you get aside from the emotional stuff and look at the numbers side, and John Walter Russell is the workhorse on this, but I use John's work to develop thoughts of my own. But John also, you know, you have to go to John's site and see what he's written about this. And John's site is early-retirement-planning-insights.com. And John discusses this sort of thing all the time in the notes section of his site. You know, how to, you know, he had an article just this morning. It was when to get back in the market, you know, and he talked about, you know, that he didn't give one answer. You know, that's what I think people from the passive investing school would like to do. They'd say, well, the answer, you know, get back into the market on December 17th. You know, that's the day. Or always be in the market. I guess that's what the passive investing people really say. But these, you know, maybe it was pre-passive investing when people engaged in short-term timing, they'd say, get back on December 17th. And the passive people say, you know, always be in the market. It's don't think about it. Just mindlessly always have the same allocation. Always. You know, it's just what the passive investing people did was they took the bad. They did come up with some powerful insights. There's powerful stuff there. But then they took the bad side of, say, short-term timing, which is sort of dominant before passive investing came along. And they said, that's a dogmatic approach. We'll be equally dogmatic, but in a more mindless way. Instead of giving reasons why you should get back in the market on December 17th, we will just say, without reason, that you should always stay at the same allocation. But we can't give any reason because there aren't any. But we'll just be dogmatic about it. We'll insist on it. And we'll achieve our goals that way. And it's a different mindless approach, but it's just as mindless. It's just as mindless. The correct approach is looking at the probabilities. And what John does in that article, and he does this all the time, you know, hundreds of questions he's explored at his site. You know, he ran the scenario surfer calculator at his site and at my site that we developed together. And You know, he says there's an argument for getting into the market today. Don't wait, because we don't have to go lower. And if we stay at the same price level, we're now at PE 10-14. Say we could stay at 14 for 6 years. That's absolutely a possible scenario. If that happens, you will be earning 6% real on your stock investment for those 6 years. Do you want to give that up? Well, if you wait to get back into the market, you're giving that up. So potentially, you're going to hurt yourself by waiting. The other side of the story is, we could have another drop of 50% over the next 5 years. So do you want to experience that? Probably not. So maybe you don't want to put all your money in the market just yet. Maybe you want to go 50%, 60%, and hold a little bit so that, you know, if we drop to very low valuation levels, you would up that, you know, to 70% or 80% or even 90% in some cases if you're a little more willing to take on risk. So what rational investors do is we don't try to come up with single solutions. We don't say, you know, the right allocation, you know, oh, the optimal allocation. This is what some of the past investors do. They say, oh, we looked at all this data and we determined the optimal allocation is 74%. That's nonsense. There is no optimal allocation. It depends on your particular circumstances, your particular life goals, your risk tolerance, all sorts of things. There is no one optimal allocation. But you can determine the probabilities by looking at the historical data. You can determine what are the risks. What's the upside? What's the downside? And then factoring in your own risk profile and your own financial goals, you can come to an allocation that makes sense. The difference with rational investing is you'll probably never be as precise as the passive investors. I won't be able to tell you, you know, even if we analyzed John's data, you know, for a week, I could never tell you 74% is the right number. You know, that's idiotic. So you'll never get that precision. But what you'll get is accuracy. The 74% number is very, very precise, but it's, of course, totally wrong in almost every case. So you suffer financial losses by going with that precise answer. What we can give is maybe we could say, well, maybe 50, 60% might make sense for someone in your circumstances. Well, maybe the correct answer was 53%. And you won't know that until 5 years have passed. Well, you'll just have to, you know, live with that uncertainty. That's the rational model. The rational model says there are uncertainties in investing. Why not acknowledge it? Why not be real? That's what it's all about. Rational investing, what is passion investing? Now, I don't know. I told you that I went through a number of possible titles for this approach to investing, and one of the possibilities I considered was passion investing. And you know, I have a thing called Passion Saving. That's my first book, and so there was a certain, you know, nice parallelism, if I could call the investing model passion investing. And there are similarities. The similarity is that in the saving realm, the reason why people don't save is not that they don't understand intellectually that it's a good idea. Every sane person understands that. And so I get very bored with all this advice where people try to sell people on saving, people who already know it. The problem is motivation. The problem is that people emotionally don't get excited by saving. People view saving as boring, responsible but boring. And I think the key is getting people excited. So my entire book is aimed at doing that. So I call it passion saving, because you're not saving out of sacrifice or out of responsibility. You're saving out of an intense longing to see the benefits of saving realized in your life, which are very significant. In investing, the similarity is that I focused on the emotional side of saving instead of the number side. And I think that paid off in development of the passion saving concept. I did the same thing with investing. My little niche in the personal finance world is to focus on emotions. And I think that's been ignored in the past to a large extent, not entirely, but to a large extent. And so that's where I focus. And I've done the same. So the same basic mindset developed rational investing as the one that developed passion saving, the idea of focusing on emotion. The trouble is we have almost exactly opposite situations. The big problem with saving is that people are not emotional enough. They know logically that they should save, but they're not excited about it. And so it's always sort of a priority five. It's a priority they never get to. They never do anything about it. The problem with investing is just the opposite. There's too much emotion. The problem with investing is people turn it into gambling. You know, they get hooked. Instead of just, you know, following what the historical data says and investing rationally, people get hooked on the drug. And they see prices going up in the 90s, and their common sense tells them you've got to lower your allocation or you're going to lose everything. This is a disaster waiting to happen. And their emotion says, no, 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 you know, throw the dice again. Daddy needs a new pair of shoes, you know. So the idea is to tone out the emotion. So on one hand, I think it would be fair to call this approach passion investing, but in one way it's not. What we're trying to do is reduce the passion. We're trying to make it less passionate rather than more so. The only way in which I was hoping to make, there is one way in which I'm trying to make it more passionate, and that's that if you can come to understand that getting good results from your investing will allow you to achieve financial freedom sooner, that will allow you to become rational in your investing strategy. See, that's how it worked for me. The only reason why I discovered these things isn't that I have an IQ of 140. Okay, that ain't it. What it is that I had a passion for being able to do the work I love. And so I wanted to accumulate money. And I wanted to have financial freedom as early in life as possible. That passion was stronger for me than the desire to gamble my money with investing, you know, with these conventional investing strategies. So I had a passion against emotional investing. And so I canceled the emotion of investing by having my emotions wrapped up in my life goals. So there is a sense in which rational investing is passion investing. But I ultimately decided not to go with that title because it's just a little too complicated explaining that point. Rational investing is scientific investing take two. I think historically, that's the best way to look at it. What's happened with investing is our knowledge of how to invest has developed over the years. There was an era, say, pre-1960s, when most people really didn't know all that much about how investing worked. There were books published. But it was not viewed as a, there weren't all these academic studies. It was a fraction of the intellectual work that's put into investing today. Unfortunately, we did better in those days than we do today. That's a great irony. But we put a lot more effort into understanding investing today than we ever have in history. And that started with, I think that started with Eugene Fama's efficient market theory in the early 1960s. I view that as the starting date. My knowledge of the history of that time is not at all good. But my sense of things is that that's where it really became a serious endeavor. And what happened is we developed the scientific approach, which I think is wonderful. The idea of making investing you can never make it a full science, but making it a quasi-science, I think, is a wonderful idea because you need to sort out the good information from the bad. And being able to say, you know, this idea was tested scientifically should add credibility. So it's a very valuable idea. The trouble is, as so often happens in life, the first take, you know, had errors. Eugene Fama didn't get it all right. He got some of it right. The market is efficient in a very long-term sense. In 30 years, the market is efficient. The trouble is Fama thought that it became efficient instantly. And so he got the investing advice absolutely wrong. You know, when it comes to what should you do with your money, that's completely wrong. But his understanding of the market was half right. His understanding of how the markets work was half right. But we got into this trouble because the so-called experts based all of their advice On the flawed model, they got all the advice wrong, and now people have suffered huge financial losses, and now the experts can't bear to admit what they got wrong. If they would admit what they got wrong, we'd be off to the races. We could solve all these problems overnight. We can't get the money back, of course, that we lost. That's lost for good. But going on a forward basis, you know, we could all invest rationally. We could all get better returns at less risk. We could all retire years sooner. But the only problem we have today is that hostility from the people who got it wrong the first time and who have a hard time acknowledging that. But what rational investing is just taking those ideas from Eugene Fama and Burton Malkiel and John Bogle, all of that camp. It's really the passive investing camp. That's the scientific model. But correcting the errors. So it's scientific investing take two. Rational investing is common sense investing. That's, you know, something that I do is, you know, again, I talk about my niche. What is, you know, what does Rob Bennett bring to the table? None of the ideas I discuss are new. You know, rational investing is not new. Passive slash emotional investing has been around since the beginning of time. Rational investing has also been around since the beginning of the time. These two models are always at battle with each other. It's always a question of, are we going to turn investing into gambling, or are we going to try to use our human reason? And because we have emotions, there's always a tug of war there. It's we are not computers with legs, so there's always a tug of war. So what I do is take the ideas that others have developed about, you know, rational ways to invest. I look to, you know, the biggest names in the field, Warren Buffett, John Bogle, Robert Shiller, on and on. And I take those ideas, but I take the best of them. You know, I don't take the things they got wrong. You know, when I found that Bogle made a mistake on how he implements stay the course, I just said, well, you know, let's cross that out. Let's not do that. Let's look at the historical data and see what the historical data says about how to stay the course, which is very different. So I X out the stuff that fails, go with the good stuff, and I don't go with the good stuff from one person. I combine. I mix and match. So I'm not a pure Boglehead. I think I'm a Boglehead, but you know, I certainly don't say that everything Bogle ever said was gold. But I'm not a pure Buffett head either. Like Buffett, you know, Buffett says to invest in individual securities, and he does an excellent job. He's wonderful at it. But I say that a lot of middle-class investors don't have the time for that. So I combine, you know, I take Buffett's idea on indexing and I combine it I take Bogle's ideas on indexing and I combine it with Buffett's ideas on valuation. And I've got this powerful combination, valuation-informed indexing. I'm just mashing the two together. So all I'm really doing is, but I'm always, my pitch is always to the average investor. I never touch, you know, the super complex stuff because it's, you know, frankly, it's over my head for one thing. But even to the extent that it's not over my head, some of it I could dig in and figure it out. But I really don't feel I have much to offer. There's lots of people out there giving sophisticated advice. My pitch is to the average investor. So I try to explain things in common sense terms. And remarkably, what I have learned is that this is the area nobody focuses on. So the greatest need today is for advice for the average person. There's millions of us trying to learn how to invest, but there's almost nothing available that gives us good information. You know, Bogle is the leader in that field, but Bogle's ideas are tragically flawed. So you can't trust them. You know, you can learn from them, but then you've got to know where he got it wrong or they're just going to get you into trouble. Shiller does a good job. If you combine Shiller with Bogle, you would sort of be there. But I don't know of anyone who's combined those ideas. You know, combine Shiller and Bogle and Buffett, and you're in good shape. I essentially try to do that with other inputs from other places, and then reduce it all to a common sense understanding of how markets work. Rational investing is emotionally balanced investing. This is why it works. Some people will say to me, Even people that agree that valuation-informed indexing is the way to go, they'll say, I love this because, you know, the numbers show that it works. And that's true, but it doesn't satisfy me to say it that way, because the correct way of saying it is, I love this because the numbers work, And the numbers give me confidence. Seeing that the numbers work gives me confidence. See, the reason that rational investors succeed and passive investors fail is that passive investing is rooted in a fantasy that valuations don't matter. Rational investing acknowledges the realities of investing. And what happens is, the longer you're a rational investor, the more confident you are that your strategies are going to work, because everything that plays out in front of you is just what you expected to see. You know, I knew, but I took my money out of stocks in 1996. I had a friend I used to meet for lunch. Well, we worked together. We would go to lunch two or three times a week, and we talked about investing often. You know, he would laugh at me. In 97, 98, 99, stocks were going up, and he'd say, "Rob, you're an idiot. You know, get a brain." And I'd say, "Well, you know, Brian, let me take a look at the historical data again." And I'd pull it out and I'd say, "Stocks are incredibly dangerous today. You don't want any money you can't afford to lose to be in stocks, not at these prices. And you can get a higher return in tips, you know, an asset class with a government guarantee attached." I said, "Brian, I think I'm gonna stick with my rational investing idea here." You know, I didn't call it rational investing then, but that's what I did. And of course, it's worked. I'm now far ahead of the game where I would have been, you know, had I followed the passive investing mindset. But not because I'm a genius, but because I had that, I had the historical data backing me up, and that gave me confidence. And of course, my confidence now grows. Now, when I see the stock crash, it grows even more. And, you know, stocks are going to be going up in years to come, and I'll be enjoying those benefits to a much greater extent than I would have had I lost, you know, 50% of my life savings in the crash. So my confidence will go up again. The longer I invest rationally, the more confident I am. Whereas with passive investing, it's just the opposite. Passive investors were very confident in the late 90s. You know, they were busting their buttons. But then, you know, stocks became dead money starting in January 2000, and their confidence has been, you know, declining, diminishing. And now with the stock crash, it's diminishing at a faster pace. And as I said, we now may have another 50% drop. And where do you think their confidence is going to be then? Emotionally balanced investing, you become more confident over time. Emotional investing, you become less confident over time. Rational investing is community-aware investing. I wrote a letter to John Walter Russell's site today, a letter to the editor, and there's a fellow there named Wayne. And Wayne shook me up a little bit a month or two ago. He sent a letter to John, and he said he had listened to, I think it was 14 of my podcasts, and he said he couldn't listen to anymore because he came to the conclusion that Rob is wounded. And that hurt me, you know, because Wayne is a sincere guy and a smart guy, and he agrees with the ideas. But I take it that what he meant is I talk too much about the emotional side of investing. And, you know, about the board politics, you know, the destruction of our communities. And, you know, it hurt me because he's not some goon saying these things. He's a real person, a serious person, a sincere person. But he came back and he wrote another letter now, and he said, "John, tell Rob he was right. You know, all these jerks, you know, should go fish or something." And I wrote a long letter to the editor in response, and I said, "Yes." You know, I said, "First of all, I'm glad to hear that, Wayne. That makes me feel better." And I said, "You're right that these people have behaved like jerks. That's certainly true. I call them goons, but it's the same thing, jerks, goons." But I said, you know, we want to be, you know, what really matters here is getting our community back. And the real problem is not just the goons. It's the much larger number of people, the normals I call them, who tolerated the goons. That's the real problem. And they tolerated the goons because they themselves don't know, I mean no offense here, but they don't know the ABCs of investing. If you don't know the ABCs, you have a hard time standing up to the goons. Because the goons act like they know, you know, they come off with all this bravado. So I said, "Wayne, you know, I don't object to calling them jerks. It's fair. But we also need to reach out the hand of friendship to these people. We need to patch things up. We need to get the goons contributing constructively again, and we need to, get our communities healthy again. And so, we need to respond with love. We need to respond with love. And I was just a little afraid. I want the normals coming to appreciate the need to discuss the emotional side of investing. I don't want the normals to start referring, to the goons as goons and jerks. I mean, to some extent, you have to talk about the subject, but we always want to understand also. We want to be balanced. We also want to understand that we need a community because we learn in a community. We're not smarter than them. Maybe we've had life experiences that allowed us to see some things that they don't see, but we're not smarter. One of the lessons we should have learned in this stock crash is we learn about investing through community. What other people think, and Shiller made this point in his article, the one I was talking about earlier. He said one of the problems is people turn to other people to learn how to invest, and he says they do so quite rationally. We shouldn't criticize them for doing that. They're doing a totally normal thing, normal, healthy thing. It's just that you can't trust your neighbor during a bull market, because in a bull market, by definition, is an insane market. That's what it means. They don't call it a bull market if it only goes up 6.5% a real. They call it a bull market when it goes up more than that, when it becomes deceptive, when it becomes crazy, when it becomes dangerous. So you can't trust your neighbor in those circumstances. And what we need to do is set up barriers so that we protect our neighbor and ourselves from going over the edge. So we need to think not just about ourselves, not how do we become smarter investors, how do we help all of our friends and neighbors and coworkers and community members, how do we help all those people to become better informed, more effective, more emotionally balanced investors? Rational investing is inclusive investing. What I mean by that is that there is no one strategy that I favor or oppose, or that rational investors should favor or oppose. I had a discussion at the Financial Webbring Forum, about technical analysis. And I don't personally believe in technical analysis. I don't think short-term timing works. But I spent a good number of posts defending them, because the passive investing dogmatists came in and they tried to stamp them out. They're idiots, they're dumb, they're not scientific, they're not this, they're not that. And there were a lot of people at that board that followed technical analysis, surprising number, I thought, given how they're treated. And I said, look, these people may be wrong. If you ask me to fill in a questionnaire, do I think they're wrong? The answer is I do. But maybe I'm wrong. That's a possibility. And if I'm wrong, I want to know about it. And I'm not going to find out about it if I insult these people. I want them sharing what they think. They're smart people, I can tell that. So why not let them have their say? And I can say I think they're wrong, but I can say so politely and respectfully. And that's true just across the board. I think we can learn from bulls, we can learn from bears, we can learn from technical analysis people, we can learn from passive investors, we can learn from momentum investors, we can learn from value investors. I want to learn from them all. So rational investing doesn't really choose favorites. It's sort of rooted in the Bogle ideas, but it's more inclusive. It's less dogmatic. Rational investing is basics investing. I discussed that a little bit above, but I guess just the added point I would make here is that I have a note here, 80-20 rule. I believe there's an 80-20 rule in many areas of life where you'll get 80% of the benefits by doing 20% of the job if you do it properly. Almost any job there is to do in life, there's things you have to get right. And then there's other fine points that it's nice to get right, but it's not so critical. And the secret of life is devoting yourself to the things that matter. Rational investing is an approach where we don't really focus on the details. We focus on getting the fundamentals right. It's a fundamentals investing approach. So For example, you could follow valuation-informed indexing and use that as your basic investing approach. But if you have a desire and you don't really know whether technical analysis works or not, follow technical analysis for part of your portfolio. As an experiment, maybe learn from it. Don't put all your money down on it. It would not be rational to put all your money down on something you're not sure about or you're not confident about. But focus on the basics. Don't spend all your time then on the hobby. Don't spend 80% of your energy on the technical analysis part that you're only doing with a small bit of your money. Focus your energies where they're going to pay off. And that's usually learning the basics, learning the fundamentals. Get that right and the rest will follow. Mess up on the basics and you're doomed. There are a lot of people out there today who know all kinds of investing ideas that I don't know anything about. And they lost 50% of their life savings in the price crash because they took their eye off the ball. They weren't studying the ABCs. And that's what really counts in the long run. Rational investing is the new buy and hold. That's what I used to call it. And you can read an article that's somewhat similar to this podcast at the I probably put it in the valuation informed indexing section of the site. I don't know. It's called something like 18 Principles of the New Buy and Hold, something like that. And I go through. I used to call this the New Buy and Hold because the purpose of rational investing is it's a buy and hold approach. I believe in buy and hold, which is a Bogle concept. The trouble is Bogle says that you can achieve buy and hold by sticking with the same stock allocation, and I say that's impossible. I say that the thing you want to hold is your risk level. You want to keep your risk level constant. That requires that you change your allocation in response to dramatic price changes. So what I try to do is, I say buy and hold was a great idea that has failed. And it's failed because it was implemented improperly. And what I'm trying to do is salvage the buy and hold concept by changing it so that it works in the real world. I'm trying to advise people not how to talk the buy and hold talk, but how to walk the buy and hold walk. Rational investing is human investing. Well, that's the title of the book, Investing for Humans. And, I talk about how we need to use all of the powers that humans have in the investing realm. Much of the conventional advice is rooted in brain power. It's intellect. But that'll get you somewhere in investing, but it won't get you all the way home. You need to use intellect, and you need to use courage, and you need to use heart. You need to care. You need to develop your emotions, and you need to learn to have courage. The courage of your convictions. It takes courage. I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but it took courage to go to a zero stock allocation in 1996 because so many people were saying I was wrong. Again, I don't mean to pat myself on the back, but I'm pointing it out as an example. I have been financially rewarded for that courage. It wasn't intellect that got me there. I'm not smarter than John Bogle. I have a podcast it's my favorite title. I call it I Know More About Investing Than John Bogle, and you can too. I think it's on the first page of the podcast titles, possibly the second, but it was a fairly early one. I'm not smarter than John Bogle, but I had more courage in that John Bogle knows about some of these ideas. I can't believe he hasn't read Robert Shiller's book. So he's been exposed to them, but he didn't have the courage to follow them. And I'm not saying that to as a dig at John Bogle. I'm just saying that's the reality. And I think it would help us all if we could acknowledge that different people have different skill sets. And, I can walk up to John Bogle and shake his hand and say, John, I have learned a lot about investing from you. Thanks, man. And I'd like to think he could do the same in return. And, that he could thank not just me, but there are hundreds of community members who have developed these ideas. I'd like to think he could thank them all. I think he can. But, it hasn't happened yet. But let's hope that that day comes. But, that's what that's about. Investing is rational investing is human investing. It's not just about having brain power. It's about having heart, and it's about having courage. those things pay off just as well. There's been too much focus on the brain side. Investing is not for brainiacs. You know, I think Warren Buffett had a line where he said, you know, if investing was just about research, librarians would be the richest people on the planet. You know, it doesn't work that way. We need librarians. Okay? I don't want the librarians lobby after me. We need them. But we need more than that. Rational investing is retire early investing. You know, I often wonder, how did I get here? How is it that Rob Bennett got to be so smart? Well, I used to be a passive investor back in the mid-90s. I did the same thing everybody else did. But I wanted to put together a plan to retire early. And that's why I studied this stuff in more depth. And if I wish that everyone would put together a plan to achieve financial freedom early in life. And if you did, putting together that plan would force you to focus on questions you've never focused on. And you would learn things about investing that you will never discover, you know, just reading the literature, you know, reading Money Magazine or listening to, you know, a television show, whatever. Make a plan. Because when you make a plan, you've got to think about, what are my returns going to be? And if you're serious about your plan, you're not going to want to put phony numbers in. That's what happened to me. I saw these safe withdrawal rate studies. I needed numbers to plug into my plan. And I said, wait a minute, these numbers aren't right. These numbers don't account for all the factors. And that's what got me started on the path I'm on today. So I think aspiring early retirees have an edge over everybody else. Not because they're smarter or better, because they plan more. If you want to retire early, you have to have a plan. It just doesn't happen otherwise. And planning is key. Rational investors are planners. Rational investing is value proposition investing. I use that phrase, value proposition, all the time. That's what it's all about. You know, people will say, oh, you know, you've got to put all your money in stocks. And I say, oh, really? Oh, really? Do I? You know, those people remind me of salesmen telling me, oh, you have to subscribe to cable, you know, got to do it. You can't afford not to do it. And I say, oh, really? You got to buy a new car every 3 years. Oh, really? Do I? The answer is no, I don't. I don't need to buy a car every 3 years. I don't need to subscribe to cable. I don't need to follow passive investing. I am my own person. I can search for value propositions. I can choose to make the most of my money. This is where I get offended. I get offended by these passive investing dogmas. I have a right to put my money to use the way I want to put it to use. And when I see that the most likely 10-year return on stocks is a negative number, I can search for a better value proposition and I can find one. Tips. We're offering a better value proposition than stocks for a long time. Tips for the long run. You know, I-bonds for the long run. CDs for the long run. When stocks offer a strong value proposition, then stocks for the long run. But show me the value proposition. You know, or go sell somebody else. Go to somebody else's door and knock on it. I want value propositions. I want to get value for my money. Rational investing is frugality investing. This is a related concept, but this is how I think about it. I spent all these years learning how to save money so that I could retire early. And then when it comes to investing, all these people are telling me, oh, forget frugality. Just throw it all in the priciest asset class there is. Stocks are insanely overpriced. Put all your life savings in them. Why? Why should I? After I did all that work to save the money, I'm going to throw it away? No, thank you. It's just as dumb to throw your money away on stocks as it is to throw your money away on, you know, expensive vacations. How is it any better? I always tell people, calculate the compounding effect of a loss in the stock market. You lost 50% of your portfolio? No, you lost a lot more than that. Count out the compounding loss. Extend that out 20, 30 years, and you'll see what you really lost. Losing money is not a joke. It's not they treat it as if it's a bad thing to lose money when you spend it wastefully, but it's a good thing. when you're investing. It makes no sense. If you are frugal in your saving and spending habits, you will be frugal in your investing habits. That means looking for strong value propositions. Rational investing is valuation-aware investing. Obviously, we always look at valuations. We look at the great power of the PE10 tool to tell us when stocks are good buy, when they're not. To understand this one, you know, check out the stock return predictor calculator at my website. You can plug in different valuation levels. You can find out when stocks make sense, when they don't, when they make some sense, but not total sense. Rational investing is valuation-aware investing. Rational investing is data-based investing. We don't go by whims. We look at the historical data. Some people will come back at me and they'll say, well, Rob, just because this is how it's always worked in the past, that doesn't mean it's going to happen that way in the future. Well, they're right. The data doesn't tell you everything you need to know. But it's a good guide because the data is objective. And there was a great thread at bogleheads.org today where a guy that I just loved the title. The guy said, I don't remember exactly, but he said, maybe nobody knows what they're talking about, you know, when it comes to investing. I came to that conclusion back in the mid-90s. I was studying all these strategies, you know, and it just goes around and around in circles. They're all obviously smart people giving these ideas, but you read one and he says this, and then you read another, he says the opposite, and you read a third, he says something in the middle. And so if all you do is follow smart people, you can't do anything. You're paralyzed. It doesn't make any sense. That's when I started to turn to the historical data. How have stocks always worked in the future, in the past? And I just work on the assumption they're going to perform somewhat like that in the future, not precisely so. But it's a guide. And it's a guide that has worked well for me. Rational investing is a work in progress. It's not a finished concept. I'm laying out principles here. I'm not asserting dogmas. I don't think rational investing is ever going to be a finished concept because I don't think humans are ever going to know everything there is to know about investing. A woman raised a great point at John's site, John Walter Russell's site. She said, I was looking at the letters there this morning, and this woman, this was a letter from some time back, but she said, I think it was about a year ago, but she said, you know, you're studying the S&P to come up with this guidance, which is, you know, that's what John and I do. But she said, you know, the markets are becoming global. The S&P is not the, you know, is not the center like it used to be. And she's right. Now, I don't think that means we throw out the research we have on the S&P. We don't have research on global markets, you know, to the same extent. So we have to use what we learned from the S&P, but we can't use it with total confidence. What we have to do is caveat our conclusions. We can come to findings about how stock investing has always worked. And we can presume that when the markets go global, the same general principles are going to apply. But we do need to make adjustments, or we need to make caveats so that we don't put too much weight on those findings. Rational investing is risk-aware investing. I think I talked about that a little bit with the compounding question that I raised. Risk, I believe, is at the core of the investing project. Risk. I don't think we even understand today what risk really is. I think that risk is emotional risk. People describe risk as volatility in prices. It's not really volatility in prices that causes the problem, because if you understand volatility, you can frankly avoid much of that risk, and the rational investor tries to do that. But the risk, the real risk, the really deep risk is that you'll get emotionally caught up. And even though you know how to avoid it or should know how to avoid it, you won't do so. You'll get caught up in the enthusiasm. So risk, I think the primary risk is the emotional risk. But rational investors are always trying to understand risk better. That's key. Rational investing is non-dogmatic. And perhaps I discussed that under the inclusive investing concept, but this is a, you know, we are inclusive. We want to hear about different strategies. We are also non-dogmatic. even when we come to findings, they should always be somewhat tentative. If there's anything I believe with rock-solid certainty, it's that the old-school safe withdrawal rate studies are analytically invalid. That's because that's the first question I looked at. And I've got, you know, almost 7 years now of evidence with no evidence pointing the other way. No significant evidence pointing the other way. But even on that one, I'll say, well, I'm 99.99999% sure. You know, I don't want to say 100%. I'm as sure of that as I'm sure that the moon is not made of green cheese. But maybe the moon is made of green cheese, you know? You got to keep the door a little bit open. And on other questions, you need to be much more open. You know, on the question of whether you know, the return in the United States is going to continue to be 6.5% real, on that, I'm much less dogmatic. You know, I think it's totally possible that we could enter a new golden age and it will be higher than that. It'll be 70.5%. Or it's possible that we've seen our golden age and that in the future it'll be 5.5% real. I don't know. I use 6.5 because that's the middle. You know, that's the middle. That's the neutral stance. But I have no problem at all with people who reject that idea and adjust the number upward or downward. That's perfectly rational. There's nothing irrational about that. You can be a rational investor and believe we're going to enter a new golden age. You can be a rational investor and believe that our golden age is behind us. And finally, rational investing is process-oriented investing. Now, that circles back to what I said in the beginning. I'm not going to give people a list of tips. That's not what it's about. What I'm really giving is a filter. I'm giving a way of thinking about investing. And you know, with that filter, and every filter is going to be a little different. Everyone's going to mix the different elements up a little differently because we're all, you know, we're all human and we're all different. We all have personalities. So we're all going to have a slightly different take. And I think that's good. I think that's healthy. That's how the community stays alive and stays self-critical. That's why, you know, I love talking with somebody like Wayne. I know I keep bringing him up, but he was being critical of me. And that helps me think through my weaknesses. Maybe I've gone on too much about the political battles, you know, in the board communities. Maybe I need to ease up on that. Maybe I need to focus more on, you know, substantive strategies instead of this process-oriented stuff. So when somebody like Wayne, he's coming at this from a different place, he gets me thinking. You know, it doesn't help when he's, you know, if there's an abusive poster, but Wayne obviously was not abusive. The abusive stuff just pollutes the community, makes people intimidated, it makes people afraid to share. So that's negative. But people like Wayne, who are critical but charitable, you know, they have good intent in their criticism. That's life. And so we all have to develop our own take, but the goal is to give these ideas or considerations to take into account in developing your strategy, but not to give formulas. It's a process-oriented approach to investing. So that's my take on what rational investing is all about. And as I say, it's an unfinished project. Maybe a year from now I'll do a follow-up and there'll be some new ideas about what rational investing is. It's not a finished project. But I hope that what I've put forward helps. Thanks for listening. Good luck with your investing strategy. Take care.